18-7022, United States v. Griffin, and Mr. Raschabo. Did I say that correctly?
Close.
correct me.
May it please the court, Jacob Raschabo, for the appellant, Ferris Griffin. A suspended misdemeanor sentence does not count for criminal history points if the underlying offense is merely similar to disorderly conduct or disturbing the peace. Mr. Griffin's suspended misdemeanor sentence was for grossly disturbing the peace by urinating in public. That's not just similar, it is disorderly conduct or disturbing the peace. Thus, his sentence clearly should not have counted towards his criminal history score. The first big clue that Mr. Griffin's offense is similar to disorderly conduct or is disorderly conduct or disturbing the peace is that the title of the statute, the body of the statute, and his charging documents all use the phrase disturbing the peace. At the very least, this suggests this is enough to show that the offense is at least similar to disorderly conduct or disturbing the peace.
In addition to disturbing the peace, they use the phrase openly outrages public decency or grossly disturbs the peace. Do we start with whether the guidelines, do we start with trying to decide if the guidelines are referring to generic disturbing the peace, and then decide if this Oklahoma the statute fits within that rubric?
I think that's right. Yeah, the government argues that this statute can't be disturbing the peace or disorderly conduct because it applies to conduct that's more egregious than Oklahoma's statutes referring to disorderly conduct and disturbing the peace. But the guidelines don't ask whether a defendant's conviction is similar to an Oklahoma statute. Enumerated offenses in the guidelines are always referring to their generic, the modern uniform generic definitions.
Well, how do we know it's not the common law definition?
I'm sorry?
You want to rely on the model penal code, right?
Right.
Okay, how do we know it's not the common law definition that we look to?
Well,
some cases have debated that, haven't they?
Not cases that I'm aware of, Your Honor. But I certainly could be wrong. If Your Honor wants to cite them back to me, I'd be happy to look into them. But this court has described disturbing the peace or disorderly conduct as crimes against public peace, order, and decency. And just as a general rule, this court has held on numerous occasions that enumerated offenses in the guidelines are given their modern generic definitions. Moreover, Black's Law Dictionary explains that disorderly conduct and disturbing the peace aren't actually common law crimes to begin with. They are the modern statutory version of the common law breach of the peace crime.
That's where I start. I started with the common law definition trying to analyze this case.
Okay, Your Honor. And I think, at least looking at Black's, it says that the common law crime is breach of the peace. And Black's expressly says that there is no common law crime of disorderly conduct or disturbing the peace. So I don't think that there is a common law definition. I think that the guidelines have to be referring to a modern form unit, the generic definition, since they're using a term that is not a common law term. And Blacks explains that the disorderly conduct is the statutory expansion on the common law breach of the peace offense, and that common law breach of the peace focused on exactly that, things that disrupted peace and quiet, so types of violent acts and loud noises. But that the modern approach has been to incorporate a wider variety of conduct and offenses, including offenses that offend public morals. And that's what Black says, that's right in line with this court saying that disorderly conduct includes crimes against public decency. The model penal code incorporates offensively coarse gestures or displays. The federal regulation does the same, and the majority of states include offensive, obscene, or indecent conduct as opposed to the Oklahoma statutes that the government relies on, which takes the more common law approach of breach of the peace.
Does it matter that Oklahoma also has a another statute that doesn't have the outrageous in it that is closer to breach of the peace?
I mean, I don't think it matters in terms of, again, the guidelines aren't asking about what a state, what a specific state says is disorderly conduct.
What about Oklahoma has ruled in Allen that for outraging public decency can only be sustained based on a far more serious disturbance than necessary to sustain a prosecution under Oklahoma's breach of the peace statutes.
Right. So Oklahoma, in holding that, the Oklahoma court is saying that it's more egregious than their specific disorderly conduct statute.
Right.
But
if their disorderly conduct statute is more like the generic that you want us to look to, then it sounds like the outrageous public indecency that your client was convicted of is a different animal, a more egregious animal.
Well, what I'm saying is that Oklahoma's disorderly conduct and disturbing the peace statute that the government cites and that I believe that the Allen court cites is much narrower than the generic definition. The generic definition of disorderly conduct and disturbing the peace incorporates both Oklahoma's disorderly conduct and disturbing the peace statutes, as well as at least pieces of the grossly disturbing. So the fact that Oklahoma thinks that a certain conduct counts as grossly disturbing the public peace or is gross misconduct, gross disorderly conduct, isn't dispositive of whether that takes it out of the generic definition.
So you would say that, you know, lewd conduct would be included within generic disturbing the peace, as opposed to being a different animal.
I mean, it would depend on your definition of lewd conduct or a state's definition of lewd conduct.
Right. How would the common law or the model penal code define lewd conduct?
I don't know that the model penal code does define lewd conduct, and I'm not sure what the definition under the common law is.
Well, I thought your argument was that it doesn't matter because that would be swept within the model penal code definition of disorderly conduct.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that. All I'm trying to say is I wouldn't go so far as to say that all lewd conduct necessarily falls within the generic definition because the generic definition of disorderly conduct includes, you know, some degree of public indecency, obscenities, things of that nature. What I'm focusing on is Mr. Griffin's actual offense of conviction. So public urination, I'm saying, fits within the generic definition of disorderly conduct. I wouldn't say
and
all.
I think I understand that argument. And it seems like a more serious version of disturbing the peace, which Oklahoma has legislated, and other types of, you know, lewd conduct, you know, those would surely always violate the lesser crime of disturbing the peace or, you know, public peace. But there could be a subset of more serious offenses. And I'm trying to figure out if this is one case where we have, you know, two different offenses that overlap to some extent. But are distinct enough to, you know, justify different treatment under the guidelines.
Right. And so what I'm saying is that the fact that Oklahoma splits its statutes into disturbing the peace and grossly disturbing the peace doesn't mean that both of those aren't generic disturbing the peace. I mean, if you look at the model penal code, has, has graded punishments. So it says, you know, offensively coarse gestures or displays, physically offensive conditions, I think threats, things like that. It has a list of, you know, A, B, C, and D are all prohibited conduct, and then it has a graded punishment. It says if the intent was to cause injury or if injury was recklessly caused, then it is this level crime. Otherwise, it's a lower level crime. So it shouldn't matter whether Oklahoma has two levels of disturbing the peace and that it puts them in two different statutes. State statutes follow the model penal code's example, and they have, you know, for example, even in Arizona, they have a disorderly conduct within Within a single statute, sometimes it's a misdemeanor, sometimes it's a felony, but it's still under the heading of disorderly conduct. Now, that felony version wouldn't count, would count for criminal history points because it has to be a misdemeanor. So the fact that they put that Arizona puts it all under one heading, Oklahoma has disturbing the peace and grossly disturbing the peace, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not all generic or that
If the guidelines excluded second-degree murder, that wouldn't mean that they're also excluding first-degree murder, would it?
I'm sorry?
Let's say they're a hypothetical statute where the guidelines excluded second-degree murder from the calculation. You wouldn't take from that, though, that they wouldn't consider first-degree murder, would you?
Well, no, but, I mean, you could certainly imagine a scenario where you would have – the guidelines would necessarily be using the generic definition of second-degree murder, and if a state, you know, if Oklahoma happens to say that what is generic second-degree murder under certain circumstances, we count that as first-degree murder, then somebody convicted of first-degree murder would have committed, just because Oklahoma calls it first-degree murder, where if it could still be the generic version of second-degree murder. So similarly here, the fact that Oklahoma says that public urination constitutes grossly disturbing the public peace doesn't mean that it doesn't fall within the generic definition of disturbing the peace. And as I've shown,
does it matter that the intent is different? Under the model penal code, you just have to have committed one of the listed acts, right? And it has to be with a purpose to cause public inconvenience, annoyance, or alarm. Your client wasn't convicted of public urination. He was convicted of outraging public decency, which requires willfully and wrongfully committing an act which openly outrages public decency. I mean, that sounds that sounds more like first-degree murder to me than manslaughter.
I'm not sure. I don't know that willfully necessarily refers to the outcome of disturbing the peace or grossly outraging public decency as opposed to the act. It could just be willfully committing an act that has this effect.
Well, the effect is different, too. One openly outrages public decency and the other just causes public inconvenience, annoyance, or alarm.
Sure. I mean, they use different terminology. And again, I do want to emphasize that my argument doesn't hinge on whether they are identical under a strict categorical approach. Under the guidelines test, it just has to be merely similar. So I think that the phrases that you're using between the model penal code and Oklahoma are similar enough. Similar, this court has held, just has to be, is given its ordinary dictionary definition, which means somewhat alike.
We're here on plain error review, aren't we?
That's true.
Yeah.
So I do think that it helps to frame it as this literally is, right. And by saying that, and I do cite a bunch of state and federal courts that have said that public urination is disorderly conduct under their statutory schemes, which includes the model penal code. And the fact that so many courts, state and federal, have said that this conduct, urinating public, is disorderly conduct under the looser common sense approach to determining whether two offenses are even somewhat alike. I think that where you have all these courts saying that it literally is disturbing the peace, that it is clearly, plainly, at least somewhat similar.
Let's say that we adopt your common sense approach, and we say that everything you said is accurate. What do we do with prong two of the plain error standard when Ms. Epperle is saying, well, there's three candidates in Oklahoma. These other two candidates are closer to either the common law or the model penal code or the generic definition of disorderly conduct or disturbing the peace than section 22. And your argument in your brief and today is, well, there could be all three may be similar, but we don't have a precedent that addresses one way or the other this question of whether or not similarity under the common sense approach or the categorical approach can be influenced by the possibility that a state may have multiple variations of a given crime.
Well, I think the plain language of the guidelines is enough. The plain language of the guidelines says that the following 13 enumerated offenses and offenses similar to them by whatever name they are known do not count. So it doesn't matter if it's disorderly conduct or disturbing the peace or whatever you want to call it. The fact that it calls it something different, it's a different title, or it exists in a different statute, it doesn't have to be the called the exact same time. And I realize that I'm out of time. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you, Counsel. Another question? Thank you, Counsel. You may be seated. Let's hear from government. Ms. Epperle.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Linda Epperle. I represent the government in this matter. At the outset, it seems that the problem, after having looked at it in preparation for this case, seems like part of the difficulty is that the offense of disorderly conduct seems like an extremely broad category. And that's the reason why in the notes of decision to the model penal code section we've been discussing, there are a number of Pennsylvania cases that hold that the offense of disorderly conduct is not intended as a catch-all for every act that annoys or destroys people, and it should not be used as a dragnet for all irritations which breed in the ferment of a community. And I think just looking at the history of the crime of disorderly conduct, whether from the point of view of the Model Penal Code or Oklahoma, generically, there is a temptation to lump a number of things into that category.
Well, isn't that supported to some degree by your adversary's point that we're not looking at the categorical approach, we're looking at similarity?
Exactly. And I think even if you're looking at the categorical approach, there would be a number of these things that would fall under that rubric. But as Judge McHugh was talking about with the common law, this whole portion of law began as a breach of peace. And there are any number of things that someone can do that can offend someone or breach the peace. In Oklahoma, I pointed out two of the most frequent things that are charged, the Section 1361, I believe, and 1362.
Why are those relevant?
Those are relevant, Your Honor, in order to show that in Oklahoma, the contrast, the difference between those crimes and the 20 other that are actually listed as disturbing the peace in Oklahoma, all of those are under disturbing the peace. In a whole other section of the criminal code, we have Section 22, which is fundamentally different by intent, by the word grossly inflaming the public. And in many ways, if you go back and look at the history of all of this, at the root of a lot of this is a difference between words that breach the peace, that upset people, and actions. And what 22 seems to criminalize is actions. And what many of the things that qualify as disturbing the peace seem to do go back to that breaching the peace theory, where someone is obnoxiously loud, whether it's people singing in a saloon all night or whether it is someone wearing an offensive shirt or saying offensive things that they know are going to upset someone. But if there's a difference between words and actions, and I think that that is where Oklahoma has come from here. And I think that that's a difference that's borne out. Even if this court were to look at the Model Penal Code, there is the Model Penal Code section 250, which deals with disorderly conduct that does not specifically include public urination. And in fact, the notes of decision for that Model Penal Code section dealing with the obscene language or acts, I think the court will find the majority of the decisions cited there have to do with obscene words.
Well, what about disturbing the peace? There are cases saying that public urination falls within the Model Penal Code's definition of disturbing the peace, right?
Yes, there are. There are several that are cited in opposing counsel's brief. I would say you need not look at the footnote dealing with 26 states in the District of Columbia, because that is not, those aren't all public urination. Many of those are simply where this notion of decency and morality has been included in. But I do believe that there are 10 to 12 states that are cited in his brief. I would point out, though, that that means there are about 40 states that we do not have indication that public urination is included as a disorderly conduct crime.
Well, he wasn't convicted of public urination, was he?
No,
We don't know what all he did.
That's
to
true.
Get charged under the harshest of the available statutes.
That's true. That is very true.
We know he, in one of the things he did was to urinate in public.
Yes, that is one of the things he did. And even just looking at it as urinating in public, there is another, like in Oklahoma, there being differing levels. Under the Model Penal Code, there is a section at 251.1 of the Model Penal Code that says a person who commits a petty misdemeanor, if he does any lewd act that he knows is likely to be observed by others who would be affronted or alarmed. That, it seems to me, would also, perhaps more accurately, cover public urination. And that is not under the disorderly conduct laundry list in the Model Penal Code, but in the next session, which deals with morality, deals with, I think, prostitution is one of the other crimes there. But lewd conduct is closer.
In Abeda, we held that in the similar to analysis that we used the common sense approach, correct?
Yes.
And don't we look at things like comparing the penalties that are available? And, I mean, isn't that where our focus should be? And it has to be plain, right?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. And this court had a number of decisions. And, in fact, although this court's decisions utilized the common sense approach all along, not all courts did that. And as a result, in 2007, the Sentencing Commission added Amendment 709, which added language to the sentencing guideline we're discussing, which indicated five considerations that the court is to look at. And those five factors include not only the elements of the crime, similar to what we would do in a categorical approach under the Armed Career Criminal Act or something, but also looking at the punishment, the seriousness of the crime, the elements, which here differ as the judges have pointed out by intent and by the word grossly, the defendant's culpability, and the likelihood that this sort of crime, what sort of indication it has for the defendant's future criminality. It seems clear that if you look at all of those factors here, the Oklahoma law is fundamentally different from disturbing the peace. At a minimum, it would seem that it is not plain or obvious that the court erred in viewing public urination under this completely separate statute as different, and that is the standard that we're under here today, is whether or not that error was plain. While there are a number of cases, I think the government's brief gives some flavor of how old some of those cases are. We don't have certainly any case since 2007 and the adoption of Amendment 709 that talks about where.
Well, doesn't that, how does that help you? I mean, your adversary says, well, the fact that disturbing the peace may have been committed under, in a long time ago for marriages between races,
mm-hmm.
doesn't that illustrate the breadth of Oklahoma's version of disturbing the peace and disorderly conduct?
It does. I think that there's a period from in our brief that goes from just before statehood up to, say, the 1920s, when this statute covered a lot of activity.
So your argument is that it could have been committed under Oklahoma law through very innocuous conduct, like marrying someone who happens to belong to a different race. It need not be egregious. It need not be outrageous by contemporary standards.
What the court has discussed is the generic definition the modern generic definition, I think opposing counsel said. And we look back at those cases today, and they seem kind of ridiculous, many of them. But I think it's important to realize the time at which those cases were filed. At those times, some of the things that were discussed may have been, wrongly or not, a gross invasion of the public decency. At the time, you know, from the 1920s before, many of those things that today would not be considered a crime at all and shouldn't have been then. But at that time, it was outrageous to the public decency. But the modern use of the statute, and this is also indicated in our brief, has had a component of sexual morality to it, whether it's nude dancing, prostitution, public urination, etc. And that is, I think, the modern implication in Oklahoma of what that means. This is why it's helpful that we look at five factors under Amendment 709 instead of just the elements here. And if you look at those factors here, again, the sentence is 30 days versus up to a year. The elements, the intent is different.
Well, if you look at his actual penalty rather than the theoretical penalty, that cuts against you, does it not?
Excuse me?
I mean, he didn't get any time.
He's suspended sentence.
In all honesty, I believe the court is correct. But we, again, don't know exactly what crime he committed in order to, haven't looked at the facts underneath it, so we are looking at the potential punishment. If the place where it is proper for this court to look at the facts involving this particular case is under the plain error analysis. Even if defendant were to prevail on whether or not public urination should be swept into that dragnet of disorderly conduct, first of all, the government would argue that that error would not have been plain or obvious to anyone. But secondly, we'd argue that even if it were plain and obvious, this case is a case under the recent Supreme Court decision in Morales, Rosales Morales, that indicates in certain circumstances the court should examine government arguments that are case-specific and fact-intensive, and looking at that inquiry, determine whether or not there are countervailing factors that would make this a case where fairness, integrity, public reputation of the judiciary would not be enhanced by exercising.
Yeah, how does Rosales Morales help you in that regard? Because there the court quoted approvingly what then Judge Gorsuch had said on our court, that if prong three is satisfied, what reasonable person would regard it as anything but a travesty if someone was required to linger longer in prison than they otherwise would, that if prong three satisfied, prong four ordinarily would be.
It is a difficult case for the government in sentencing review. However, I believe that the court is also clear in indicating that this is not going to be a closing the door completely. That they've left open the chance that there will be a case where it simply would be a travesty of justice to grant sentencing review on a technicality like that here. Here there are countervailing forces. We have a defendant who's not, at this point, committing disorderly conduct crimes. At this point, he is in possession of a firearm, having kidnapped his wife, drug her around half the night to the point where she had to run to a church for help, and he followed over there to the church looking for her with a firearm in his belt. Based upon this defendant's conduct, the sentencing court below varied upward six levels because the court believed the criminal history as it stood did not sufficiently.
Well, doesn't that also cut against you, because Judge White varied, and he predicated the sentence based on the guideline once he decided to vary upward six levels.
So he
predicated the sentence based on the guideline range.
He did. However,
so if the guideline range, if the starting point was wrong, then presumably the outcome would have been wrong, right?
Potentially. If he had varied on any reason other than the criminal history seemed inadequate here, if that weren't a factor, maybe. But if the criminal history was not adequate at the level it was, going lower as far as a criminal history score certainly would not assist in believing that the public would be protected. The court here looked at this defendant's past conduct, looked at the offense that was immediately committed, looked at the fact that did this defendant not have a second gun, he would have been looking at an increase under the guidelines to begin with. And the court noted in the sentencing that, you know, he shouldn't be getting credit for that. That kind of makes it worse that he had two firearms. The court felt a tremendous fear that this defendant was going to continue to assault women, whether it was his wife or other members of the public. All of those are case-specific factors that we would urge this court caution against using your discretion. Under these circumstances, it's more likely there would be disrepute brought on the judiciary by granting relief to this man over whether public urination is disorderly conduct. We ask the court to affirm.
Thank you, counsel. We understand the arguments well presented. Counsel are excused, and the case shall be submitted.